Hi, this is Mike Smith connecting in from Barcelona. Welcome to episode 2 of Team Telepathy. And joining me again is Tom Dorley, founder and chairman of Sage Partners. Tom's connecting in from Boston. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you again.
Good to hear you. So, Tom, in session 1, we explored this idea of team telepathy, right? And how the speed, fluidity, creativity, anticipation, cohesion of team telepathy is the difference between a good team and a great one. And I think in business, we're about creating great teams. So you also talked about how both a creative business strategy and a supportive team strategy are important for any business these days, particularly in these tough times.
Yeah, that's true, Mike. And it's really very important to stay focused on what it is your goal. Your goal through all of this is to maintain the team's capability to grow, because growth is where value gets created. One thing we learned in the 2008 collapse of the global economy was sort of two things. One is that those companies that sort of took, in spite of the fact they were hunkering down and cutting back on areas, they took growth-oriented risks, they were the winners. That those that did those things to maintain growth initiatives and momentum, they gained all the value. And the rest of them, we're fighting over table scraps. So as important as it is to make sure you're appropriately cautious, you have to continue to say, we need to maintain these teams, and these teams need to have the capability to grow. Critically important.
Tom, I have to ask one question because it's current, right, about growth. When you have examples like in Twitter, which has grown very fast, and then that leads to a quick cutback then of staff.
Sure.
How do you have a strategy that depends on growth, but also protects the team?
See, that's what a leader does, Mike. A leader has to be able to understand how you balance that off. You have to have a team that is sustainable, but you also have to push them to grow. But you can push them too far. I mean, recently, in terms of Facebook or Meta, Zuckerberg said, hey, we grew too fast. Similar thing is at Twitter. You have to balance these two out. You want to build a sustainable organization with teams that can, in fact, function over the long term. You push them to grow, of course, but there's a fine balance, and that's what leaders do. They have to strike that balance, Mike. It's not easy. That's why they call it leadership.
So let's talk about leadership then in preparing teams, right, in times of change, which is what most businesses face today, right? A very different, challenging new season. Your thoughts about preparation?
You can't just sort of jump into things. You have to get the team together. You have to sort it out. You have to make sure that you understand what the strategy is going to be, that you build a culture of trust, and then you go forward. And it's really important to do that. But there are tremendous examples of companies in the product development cycle that have to say that, do we know what kind of a product we want to develop? How do we do it? There's something called rapid prototyping that you sort of do and you try, and then if it fails, you try something else and all that sort of thing. But it's all about sort of starting at the beginning with the grounding to say, here's what it is we want to do. Here's how it is we're going to do it. But you, the team, have to make the adjustments on an ongoing basis, because we can't predict that.
Yeah, and in team sport development, right, we have this proven annual new season preparation framework, right? Every year we get a team, bring it together, help it feel settled, confident. That's part of our sport DNA. And we think that can act as a good framework for business in transition. And then within this framework in sport, we have to get three things right. And first, you've got to have the right people, the right players. You've got to have the right process to take them from A to B. And you've got to have the right kind of patience. And those are the three Ps, right, that we're going to discuss today. So let's first have a look at the right players, right? What does having the right player mean for a team? And let me use an example from the world of football or soccer. A great player, Lionel Messi, right? So even if you're not a soccer fan, you probably know that name, right? He's kind of the Michael Jordan of football and soccer. So Messi is the third highest goal scorer of all time in this global sport, 800 goals, you know. And so if you've achieved this, you are definitely from another planet. But his less talked about talent is this seemingly, you know, telepathic ability and his desire to combine with teammates, you know, and it's this combination mentality that just brings enormous added value to him as a player. So, Tom, this ability and desire to combine has got to be a key criteria in business team recruitment.
Yeah, it certainly is, Mike. And I had a client years ago at Kimberly-Clark, Darwin Smith, the CEO, and he said that he wants to have team members, players, people on his team who are good enough, but also are on the bus. In other words, that they bought into what it is we're trying to do. And this is a two-part thing. He has to say, hey, Mike, I want you on the bus. You have to decide to say, yeah, that's a bus I want to ride. Then you have it together. Then you sort of know what it is you're trying to do, and you're working towards a common goal. You're collaborating. You can criticize. You can make changes. You can make adjustments, of course. But you're all geared up to say, this is what I want to do. That's really very important.
It seems like post-COVID, you know, with top creative talent, they actually want more seeing co-designing what that bus is.
Oh, yeah. We talked about this in the first episode, that what has happened pre-COVID and post-COVID. Pre-COVID, this idea of teams were sort of good. Fine, we should talk about teams. But now this whole idea of, because high talent people are mobile, they don't like working for you, they can go work somewhere else. And it's the high talent people that you want to be concerned about, your Lionel Messi's and those sorts of folks. And so it's important to say, here's what we want to do. How can you buy into that? How can you help shape it? You're right. It is a co-design. It's a co-creation. It's collaboration. And that's what makes a really good team.
So once we have the right people, the right players, you need a process, right? You need the right process to bring them together. So in our business conversations, or if you look in the business press, right, Tom, there's a challenging transition time, right? For instance, creating a new hybrid way to work is a transition. And what we don't always see is this sort of convincing process, you know, for team preparation and transition. You kind of see a general concept, a structure, you know, new hybrid, 2 days remote, 3 days in the office, what we do where, now adapt, navigate. But what we don't really see as sport people anyway is this kind of process that takes the team from A to B, you know. And in sport, we have this preparation mindset, you know, this proven preparation process that we call team preseason. And it takes a team from being not yet ready to being together and ready for game one. So the preparation process in business and how you manage that without micromanaging that process.
Sure. And the best analogy I have is a run-in over the last couple of years, a fellow by the name of Jocko Wilnick, a former Navy SEAL. And he's put together a company called Echelon Front that talks about leadership. And he does it by talking about how a SEAL team works. And you work at the front end diligently to prepare. You put together the pieces. What is the engagement? What are we trying to do? What could go wrong? If this happens, what do we do? It's tremendously detailed in terms of the preparation process. And that's really very important, because what he knows is when a SEAL team gets to where the action is, everything changes. And you have to be able to adapt. And now, you have to be able to adapt like in seconds, right? Well, it's not quite the same in terms of a typical business environment. But nonetheless, a software developer somewhere along the line makes a change to go this way as opposed to that way. You can't always go back and ask permission. Or you're pitching a new customer, a new client, and you're on the fly, and you have to react to it. Well, if you have the preparation down properly, you know what to do. You know how to make that connection. That's what a SEAL team does, and that's what a good business team does, and that's what the team telepathy is all about, Mike.
And in session three, we're going to look into, you know, real detail about the role of the coach, which transfers over to the role of the team leader. But here I just wanted to touch on the role of the club, right, or the equivalent of the company. What's the company's role? It's not to run the team or directly prepare the team. That's the coach's job. Team leader's job. So what's the role of the company or the club? Besides, you know, ensuring financial security, right, and the top line strategy of where we're going, for us the club's key responsibility is this generation of pride and inspiration and togetherness And what I would describe as club, using the sport metaphor, is they are the custodian of the team shirt. Because in the team shirt, there's everything, right? There's the mission, there's the value, there's the history. You know, when Tom, when I was a player, I remember that special feeling when you pull on the team shirt, right? And that deep sense of, you know, belonging that's in the fiber and the color and the badge. What does that mean to you, keeper and custodian of the shirt?
No. First about the shirt, I played rugby in college. I still have my college rugby shirt, and I wear it from time to time just to sort of remind myself what it's all about. But the example of how the club works, how the overall organization works. I happened to be hired by Apple as a consultant some years ago, as they were struggling with how to break out from just being a computer. And Steve Jobs, who was somewhat the coach, but he was really the representative of the club of Apple, said, "We want to do a smartphone." Well, I arrived on the scene and was talking with them and all that. The phone they had was something called a Newton, which was this cumbersome thing that looked like one of those handheld devices that James Bond, Sean Connery, used back in the 70s. Eventually became the iPhone. So there are two things to think about here. One is it took them years to get there. That's a matter of patience. So they had to have patience. They were driving towards a goal, but they had to have patience. And secondly, Steve Jobs was not a developer. He couldn't write software. So that was not what he did. So he had to lay out the vision. Here's what I want the thing to look like. You guys keep working toward it. And they tried some things and it failed and tried some things. And eventually they came up with this wonderful thing called an iPhone. But that's a good example of how it works. First of all, a lot of preparation. Secondly, a process to get to the result. Thirdly, patience all around the leader driving the team and inspiring the team. Now, you might say that Jobs was a little bit unusual. He is unusual. He's a Lionel Messi, right? You don't have a lot of those around. But setting the frame for the team to work in, that's important, and that's the role of the organization, of the company.
So I have three kids. It's 6 weeks before Christmas, you know, so patience is a virtue, is a common mantra these days, right? But Tom, in business, just promoting patience and just letting things evolve can be tough, right? When you don't have, you know, the points on the board that were expected. And yes, there's a lot of pressure around that.
Yeah, there is, Mike. And so part of this whole idea is, how do you gauge progress before you reach the goal? So the goal might take months or even years to get to. And so there are a couple of things to think about. One is, you come up with your story, what it is you're going to do. It's your inputs, the things you're going to follow, the game plan. And then you say, are we still doing that? So you measure and you monitor input to make sure we're doing those things we said we wanted to do. The second thing you do is you look for leading indicators. What are the things that tell us we're running the right path? If it's a new product, then we take out that first product. What are the leading edge customers saying to you about it? If you decided that you want to try to knock off a particular competitor somewhere, have you made any inroads or not? So those leading indicators tell you things. I'll give you one more big one. Coming out of a recession, which we're about ready to go into, I'm reasonably certain, right? You want to be able to come out of it faster than the other guys. So you want leading indicators to say that the tide is starting to turn.
In terms of, you know, team telepathy, what I would say is that it's kind of a primary responsibility of the coach is to work with the team to together set these milestones, to understand the team dynamic. How do we measure it? How do we recognize our progress before we might see points on the board? Working with your team to create the milestones gets that buy-in that you need. So it's not just a top-down KPI, quarterly meeting, tick, tick, tick.
And you're exactly right. People who are at the coalface, are at the firing line, they know what's happening. Tap them, and they'll tell you how things are going if you listen.
Yeah. I think you told me a story of an American football coach who had a kind of wise insight into, you know, everybody's impatiently waiting, you know, in game one, particularly the fans, where's the result, right?
Yeah, and in his case, he said that it was in the NFL-type football. It's a 17-week season. He says, I don't know the team I'm going to have until about the fifth game. Then it's sorted out. Then he's, in fact, he didn't use his language. Then he would have team telepathy in action because he knows how to position people, who's going to do what, who can do what, who can't do what. And it took about 5 weeks into a 15-week season. But you're right. If you're too anxious, you make mistakes, and you end up doing the wrong thing, pushing the team to do things they aren't prepared to do, and it's disastrous.
On that thought, thanks, Tom, for your insights, for spending time with us. It's been great doing the two podcasts and for exploring this idea of team telepathy.
Hey, Mike, I want to just say one thing as we sort of wind up here. I've really been enjoying us evolving and exploring this idea. You have a really big idea. Most people talk about teams as checklists. Do these six things. Mm-hmm. But what you've done is you've created a visual picture of what we're trying to do. I understand when a team brings the fans to a feet. How does that happen? Well, that's a thing called team telepathy. There's a lot of nuance to this. As you explore it in the next session, I'll be signing on myself to sort of understand in greater detail how this works. Teams are the engine, Mike. This is a good idea.
Well, thanks, Tom. And so in session three, we'll explore the critical role of the coach or the team leader in developing team telepathy. And we'll do that through a discussion with a great basketball coach and human development expert, Annette Lynch. So until then, stay well and support your team.